Phil with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the East City Ranch, other known as Paranormal and UFO Central. We've got some crazy weather going on here. We have a thunderstorm, so hopefully we'll stay on the air. We've got a little bit of rain, and it might get a little crazy later, but who knows. We took some amazing footage just the other day of the mountain doing some strange things, so we'll have that up on YouTube. But we had, it looked like lightning, but it was coming from the ground, and the mountain was lighting up, and there was nothing, anywhere around, not one cloud, nothing. It wasn't heat lightning. It was coming from the ground up, and the whole mountain was just throwing off tremendous bursts of energy. And it was the same time these coronal mass ejections have been hitting. So we've had some, about 3-4 major coronal mass ejections, one after another, hitting the Earth, or solar flares, that some people call them. But it's going to be a little crazy. So those affect the bioelectric fields around the human body. They create emotional outbursts, make people do crazy things. So kind of pay attention to your surroundings and realize you're not alone, that we are going through some shifts. But it also creates increase in earthquake and volcanic activity, which we are seeing on the planet right now. We're seeing a lot of quakes and some new volcanoes going off. So this is going to escalate right up to 2012, so hang on to your hat. If you think this isn't going to affect you, and you have a physical body, guess what? You're on the same ride we're on. But anyway, I've got a great show tonight. I've got Mel Fabregas on the show, and Mel did the honor of coming up to see us, and got to see us here at East City and meet some pretty amazing people. We had quite a lineup during the East City Conference. So without any further ado, I want to bring Mel on the show. Mel, are you with us?
I'm with you. What a pleasure being with you, James. Hi.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
I've got a couple of questions for you just to start out with. You've got the Veritas show, and we've got your link up there to the show. But how did you get into the broadcasting?
You know, that's a very good question. And just to let everybody know, it's very difficult for me sometimes to switch my interviewer hat, my interviewee hat. So I'm still practicing and learning, so bear with me here. But that's a great question. I have absolutely no journalism, no broadcasting experience. I had never interviewed anybody in my entire life. However, a few, let's call them paranormal, or things that I cannot understand, happened to me many years ago. And we can talk about them later if you'd like. But basically, in, I would say, early December, late November 2008, I had a dream. And the dream basically said, take action, take action. So I woke up in the morning, and the thought kept going, take action. And I hardly watch the subliminal tube. Those who listen to my show know I hardly watch any TV. But that day I decided to turn on the TV, and as I'm channel surfing, all I could see was Milton Torres. And those who listen to you may know who Milton Torres was. He was an Air Force pilot who in the 1950s was ordered to shoot down a UFO. So here I am, surfing the TV, CNN, Fox, everybody had them on. And nobody would ask any questions. We'd have them all for about 2 minutes and let them go. And I thought to myself, maybe take action means that I need to interview this man. So in less than 10 minutes, I found his telephone number. And I said to myself, well, I can't just call him and say I'm Mel and I'd like to talk to you about what happened to you in the 50s. So as my wife is walking by, I said, hey, what kind of a name can I use for a possible show that had to do with everything that I talk about? And she just uttered the words Veritas. So I called Dr. Torres, and I told him that I was from the Veritas show, and asked him for an interview. The next day I recorded the interview, which was mainly a souvenir for me because I wanted to hear more of the story, and I uploaded it to a couple of Internet forums. In less than 24 hours, I was flooded by email. The hits were in the thousands. And people were asking, when is the next show going to happen? So at the time, Stephen Bassett emails me as well. And most of you listeners know who Stephen Bassett is. So I decided to talk to him, and he said, can I please have Milton Torres' information, because I'd like to have him on in the X conference. So I said, yes, if you please have an interview with me. And he said, absolutely. So that's how the Veritas show started. I don't know how the style, how the whole show evolved. It has been a matter of osmosis, talking to all the individuals, you and everybody else. And that's how it happened. I had no experience whatsoever. I always had, James, an overly developed sense of wonder. I was the kid in school that some of the teachers hated. I went to a Catholic school all my life where certain questions were not allowed. Any paranormal questions were frowned upon. So I was that kind of kid, and I was always told not to ask certain questions. And once I matured and became older, I decided that it was time for me to explore these things. So that's where I am now.
Kent, is there any way you can move a little bit away from the mic? We're over-modulating, so.
How's this?
That's better. Yeah, it's
okay.
Sounds good. Yeah, that sounds awesome. It's amazing what I've seen is some of the most famous people in broadcasting and things like that just, you know, woke up one day and just had a dream or had a vision, and they went after it. And I was the same way. I when I wrote the books, I was told some things in spirit. I don't even want to say what they are. They were so outrageous, I laughed. I thought they were really funny. They told me what I would be doing, and I just said, yeah, right, you know. And I go, that's crazy. And now I'm doing all the things that they told me about, you know, quite a while ago. So, you know, it's just a matter of doing it, you know, just getting out there, doing it, give it your best shot, and just, you know, I would say launch your boat and make course corrections as you go.
Exactly. Most of our life is it's like an airplane. If you're a pilot and you go from, say, L.A. to Hawaii, you'll spend probably 80% of your time trying to get back on track, because otherwise you get lost. But I remember having you on my show and you telling me all the stories growing up, and I have a few of those stories if you'd like to hear them.
Sure, I'd love to hear them.
Well, when I was about 7, that was the very first time where I knew that something was different with me. I was about 7. I had a crush, my very first crush in school, of this little girl. And I came home, and I had a dream that night again. And the dream basically said, next day you're going to be walking after school to a house. So I came home from school that day, and I decided to start walking, probably about a mile or 2 miles. And that's during the time when you could walk far away from home without having any fear, as you wouldn't allow your 15-year-old kid today to take the bus. But here I am walking about 2 miles, and I go directly to this house that I've never been to. And there's this big German Shepherd approaching me, and a lady comes out and says, son, you're lost. And I said, no, I'm looking for, let's call her Mary. That's not her name. And she says, sure, let me get her for you. And then Mary, who was this girl from my school, comes out, and she says, what's happening to you? Are you lost? Why are you here? At the time, I was so embarrassed that I couldn't explain how I got there, that I just decided to walk back home. And all the way home, I was wondering, how in the world did I find out where her house was? So that's another story. Years later, I moved to Miami, Florida, in 1991, a year before Hurricane Andrew. That's when I left. At 11:30 p.m. every night, the security alarm would go off. And I've had this conversation with Colin Andrews, who you may know, who had a similar story to tell. But at 11:30 every night, I would go downstairs running, and the alarm panel would say that something was happening or vibrating in my room upstairs. So I decided to yank the alarm and just turn it off completely. Well, the next day, instead of the alarm, I hear a bing, as if somebody with a piece of metal hit the stairway rail. So I jump from bed, and I'm saying, no, please, that's not possible. So I touched the railing, and it was vibrating. Okay? Then Hurricane Andrew comes along. I moved, my company sends me to Mexico City. I'm there at a hotel for a month. Nothing happens. But then I moved to an apartment. And then the first night, I'm sleeping. At 11:30 p.m., I feel so cold that I look to the window, and the window is open and the curtain's flapping. And I said, oh, maybe I just left the windows open. So I locked the windows, piece of big metal. The next day I made sure that it was closed. 11:30 p.m., the window opens again. So at that time, I just felt I was going crazy. I could not explain. I mean, anything paranormal I could not explain. So the next day I go to the office, I'm hiring people, and this lady comes along. And people who listen to my show know when I refer to the witch lady. This lady looked like a witch. Makeup, long nails, etc. So I decided to hire her on the spot. I don't know why. She made me feel very comfortable. And she asked me, sir, are you okay? And I usually never tell strangers what's happening with me. So I told her the story, you know, the 11:30 p.m. thing. And she says, well, do you mind if I borrow your pen, your pocket pen, and I'll bring it in the morning? She brought it back in the morning and started telling me things about my past that nobody knew but me. And she said, somebody is trying to communicate with you, and you're blocking it. You need to learn how to meditate. And this is probably almost 20 years ago, and I still have not learned to meditate. I always fall asleep. So hanging out with people like you, James, maybe I'll excel to it. So a few months later, almost a year later, she comes to the office. We became friends. And she said, she came up crying. And she says, I'm crying because you're leaving. And I said, why? I'm so happy here in Mexico City. Things are great. Well, a couple of days later, the economy crashed there. And my former boss called me. And she had told me, you're going to get a phone call from somebody and you're going to leave. The next day I come to the office and she says, you got your phone call, didn't you? So then she started telling me things about my future. She said, you're going to move to a place that's very warm, has a lot of nature, and you're going to marry somebody that looks like this. You're going to have, you know, X number of kids. And most importantly, one day you'll be doing something. You're going to be informing the world. And I said, wait a minute. I can't understand everything. She even said that I next of kin was going to die. My dad died the year later. I married somebody that, you know, exactly how she described, but I could never understand the informing the world part. So now I know, and she said, one day you'll know, and in due time it will be revealed to you. And this is how all these, the transition that I'm going through, that's why, James, when I met Lisa Renee, I had a ton of impact because she had her kundalini. I've never had a kundalini. I didn't even know what kundalini meant. But we were both in the corporate world. Something triggered in our brain. A switch was turned on, and this is where we are today.
Great. Yeah, there's so many stories. I mean, it sounds like my story, basically. You know, it's very similar. I was doing commercial real estate and had my own office and people working for me. And then I had a little different experience. I had a drowning, and that kicked everything on. And from there on, you know, I was intently, you know, on a spiritual journey. But you know, it sounds amazing. Do you still have contact with this woman that you're saying looks like a witch? Or
funny that you ask. No, I do not. And not because I don't want to have contacts, because for years I've been wanting to talk to her again. But the moment I left Mexico City, I moved to Northern California, the first thing I did was call the office to say hello to her. And they said, well, Amalia, that was her name, never came back after you left. So I said, okay, fine, I'll call her at home. Her phone was disconnected. It's almost as if she was there for a mission. Maybe to have, some people say, maybe she wasn't even from here. Well, look, I can't prove anything. But the things she said about my past and my future have been almost materializing 100%. But another thing she did, she gave me a little red pouch, a little bag that has some stones inside. And she said, I want you to carry this little bag with you at all times. Don't ever open it. So I took it with me, and I always had it in my wallet. And I was being promoted again and again and again. I was doing very well at the company, in the company I used to work for. And then one weekend I went to New York for a conference. I was putting gas in the car. It was snowing, and I dropped my wallet. And she had told me, don't open the bag, remember. So I get back to my hotel, and the police says, sir, we found your wallet. And I said, great. So I go to the station, get my wallet, no money, and the bag was open. So the first thing I did, oh my, the bag is open. I threw it in the first trash can I found. I go back to the office in California on Monday, and although I was doing great for the company, I was producing a lot of money for the company, My boss calls me in his office and says, your position has been eliminated. So it was almost like a downward spiral from that moment on, to the point that they eventually sent me to the desert where I live in Arizona. And at the time, you know, I'm from the mountains. I'm from the ocean. I grew up in Puerto Rico where there's a lot of green and ocean. So I was not used to the hot weather and the desert scenery. But that's where I was placed. You know, bad news in the company. Eventually, I hated the corporate world so much, and some of you who are listening may understand the rat race gets to you after so many years, that I started buying businesses. And that's what I do until now. That's why I can't produce more of Veritas for you, because I have all those, let's call them trivial responsibilities that I still have. So that's another story that came about from that lady as well, James.
Great. Bart, maybe she's listening and calling into the show or something. That would be amazing. There's so many things I want to talk to you about. First of all, I don't know if you want to cover this or not, but we both had James Fox on our show. And I just heard on the news, I never listen to the news, but I was in my truck driving along, and I turned on the radio, and I hear, oh, happy days, you know, the well is capped, you know, on the Gulf oil volcano, let's call it. They said, oh, it's capped, you know, they've sealed it off, everything's fine, they've laid off the workers and laid off half the ships for the cleanup because the oil is all cleaned up and there's just a little small amount left. And I couldn't believe my ears when I heard this after seeing, you know, the reports that both of us have done with the videos of the ocean just miles and miles and miles of oil everywhere. Do you have any updates on that?
As a matter of fact, I do. But first of all, on behalf of our listeners, I want to thank James Fox. He's doing a terrific job. He's the type of media that we actually need. What he's reporting from there is not what you get anywhere else. But, yes, a couple of hours ago, I got a video from James. He's going to update me tomorrow. He rented a plane once again and decided to fly over the Grand Isle area, which was one of the most affected. When he was there, it was full of oil on the coast, and he just cannot believe it. There's hardly any oil anywhere. And I've had some other people send me videos that the oil is actually standing less than a few inches under the sand. So apparently the Corexit 9500, which is the dispersant that BP has been using, has been effective to cover the oil. However, the biggest concern that we all have is the health hazards that are going to be appearing on the people and in the marine life of the area. We won't find out now, maybe not next week, maybe not next month. But in the next few years, you're going to see people developing a lot of strange diseases or conditions. And, of course, the pharmaceutical companies and the medical industry will basically say, well, that's just a disease that you develop. It's going to be very difficult, plausible deniability to point fingers at others. But that seems to be the case. The oil is nowhere to be found. And now, I don't know about you, James, but I would not eat fish from that area right now unless it's tested.
Yeah, they're saying, you know, the fish is fine to eat. There's no problem. Swim, go swimming. You know, who knows what's lurking, you know, down low. But I know the Corexit, it just sinks the oil, basically. And then the fumes that come off of that, you know, the benzene and methane and everything else just destroys your lungs, your upper respiratory system. So I know a lot of the workers are coming down. I guess some have died, but some are coming down with real serious lung disorders and upper respiratory problems. So anyway, any way you look at it, there seems to still be just a massive cover-up. And I am really hoping there was some divine intervention or something happened to remove all that oil, but I have a funny feeling a lot of it just might be lurking just underneath, you know, the water because it was sent down. And I also just got a video that said a lot of the oil actually shut down the Gulf Stream, which is quite interesting. I don't know if you saw that one.
I did. I did see that. And the reports I'm getting is that if this is indeed happening, that the Gulf Stream stopped, that's going to create a different weather pattern. And maybe, just maybe, in the month of June, and look, I'm the first person to tell you that I don't believe that, that humans are creating global warming. Mars and other planets are warmer than usual. I mean, we have solar maximums and solar minimums. However, if this was done on purpose, and if this is one of the reasons why, I mean, look at Russia. One of the reasons why, I don't know if you've heard in the news, they have a huge fire taking place there. They have shut down the exports of wheat. And what that's going to cost, we're okay in the Western world. We spend about 10% of our income in food, but other countries spend 50, 60, 70% of their income in food, and there's going to be a lot of starvation because of this. The month of June, the month of July have been the warmest on record. And I don't say this to say, Al Gore, here we are, global warming. No, but it's just a fact. June, July have been the hottest months recorded in the history of recorded weather. So this could be correlated to what's happening in the Gulf streams.
Yeah, definitely. What I heard basically that if that Gulf Stream does shut down, all that warm water going up there is going to be coming up there, and it could actually throw Europe into an ice age if it doesn't restart. But, you know, there's all kind of, who knows what's going on, because it's just so crazy. There's so many things happening and unfolding as we speak, and I think if the people wake up and get the message from this and stop, you know, destroying their environment and destroying the ocean and letting everybody cover it up, and you know, maybe some divine intervention, you know, will step in or has stepped in and done some major work on this arena.
And just today, I don't know if you've heard that an ice sheet measuring about 100 square miles from Greenland has detached itself. It's 600 feet high, 100 miles. It's three times the size of Manhattan. And almost nobody's talking about that. If this is happening, this is going to be huge.
Yeah, that's a lot of, if it's that high, it's going to displace a lot of water, that's for sure. And I know they're having another volcano just went off in Indonesia. I mean, it's on. The ocean floor is rising, I can't remember how many feet, something like 13 feet a day over off the coast of Australia. So, and any way you look at it, we're definitely on a ride. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions. You know, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your experience here at the East Eddy Ranch and at the conference that you attended.
Absolutely. And let me just say...
Oops, we lost you. I think we lost you. As soon as we get into the meat of things, we get into the really interesting things, lo and behold,
I'm here.
You're back, great.
Anyway, about East Eddy, and as I was telling Lisa, if you had asked me a year ago if I would be discussing these topics, I would have told you that you needed some medical or mental assistance. So for months, I started approaching this subject with a skeptical mind, of course, because many people just want proof, and at the time I needed proof. So a lot of people months ago would tell me, you need to go to James Gilliland's ranch. You need to go to James Gilliland's ranch. And I would see the videos, and I would say, my God, is that true? Is that Photoshopped? And as time goes on and on and on, then I'm having Dr. Brooks Agnew on the show. And a lot of people who listen to me know the story, but he told the story of what he went through in 2006. And now that I know, I think let's call it a kundalini awakening as well. After I heard somebody who was trained in academia, somebody with the credentials that Dr. Brooks Agnew has, I could not anymore ignore it. Then I decided that I had to have James Gilliland on my show, and then he told me his story, how he was a real estate person, and he was in the corporate world just like me, and all these things happened leading to where you are today. So then a lot of people in your ranch that listened to my show started emailing me and say, Mel, you need to be here. So to make a long story short, they finally convinced me, and I needed to find out for myself. So I embarked on this trip, went from Arizona to Portland, drove the beautiful way to up to your ranch in Trout Lake, got there, and immediately after I got there, I'm not lying, I felt a change of energy when I stepped on your ranch. And then you have what's called the vortex right at the center of your ranch there, and I decided to spend time there and look up, and it was a change of energy. It's almost as if the wires in your body were changed, and the people around. You had doctors, you had attorneys, engineers, you had hippies, you had every race, every ethnic group, and just to be together with one common goal, as you said, positive intent, love, and compassion. You felt that everywhere. So I met great friends, and on the first night after listening to some of the conferences, I sat down in a lounge chair and started looking up, and since I don't know how to meditate, I just closed my eyes and I started wishing. I wish to have something that I can prove. Because I've seen a few things in the past, but I've never confirmed it to anybody because I'm the kind of person that if I'm telling you something, I have to give you proof. So I said, I need to have something, please, that I can prove that what I've always thought was real, meaning extraterrestrial life, that I can actually see something, not tangible, because I can't touch it, but I can see it. So in less than a minute after I had that thought, this light came approaching northwest, southeast, and I thought maybe that's the International Space Station, but no. It almost stopped. It changed not direction, but it changed the speed, and it started glowing on top of us, almost as if saying, I know you want to know. I know you're looking at us, and here's proof for you. I have my video camera on hand, but I said to myself, if I turn on this camera and I miss this first sighting, I'm not going to forgive myself. So I decided to just enjoy it by myself. Then the next day I found out that our mutual friend John Kelly had filmed it and provided evidence so that I could show the world that's what happened. Also, you were kind enough to invite me to this show to ask you wish. During the time I was at the ranch, and I could not believe it. I mean, years ago, I used to listen, and I still listen to Coast to Coast AM, and I would listen to James and to everybody else who was there, and I was a fan of all of you. And to be able to be in the same room with James Gilliland and everybody else who was a speaker, it was just a highlight for that moment. I just could not believe that I was standing there talking to all of you, and all of you are my friends now. So every day was something different. Then when I left East Eddy after having such a great experience, James, coming back to the concrete jungle, I felt something, and a lot of people emailed who were there saying the same thing, that they felt out of place. They had this nostalgia, and I still miss the ranch. So I envy you that you're there broadcasting from your ranch, James, because it's such a special place. And as long as you're having your conference there, I will be there every year.
Right. Yeah, anytime you want to come and do a live broadcast, you're more than welcome. Now you're part of the group. I think you were that when we did the intention experiment and we brought the Pleiadians and some of the other energies in for people to feel and experience. I know the people in there were sighing, laughing, and crying, and just had huge openings with this energy. But the amazing thing was when we walked outside and that beautiful pinkish orange ship flew right over our heads. Were you out there when that happened?
No, I missed that. Oh. However, the ship that John Kelly filmed, the one that I saw, it looked different in the way he filmed it. Apparently, when you see it with your own eyes, the lens changes things. But it was also pinkish orange. But the one you're stating was on a Sunday, and I had left. The people at my hotel saw it, and they just couldn't believe it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It was on one came out on the 4th of July, and we thought it was fireworks because they let fireworks off at the school over there first, and we saw this huge reddish-orange ball rise up in the sky, and then it sat there for a while, and then it didn't come back down. It just sat there, and then next thing you know, it traveled towards us and went right over our heads, John Raleigh was out there, and he filmed it. He got some really good footage of it. Brooks Agnew was out there. He filmed it. I'm trying to think of who else. Renato Longato filmed it as well. with, you know, his famous saying, "I got it, I got it,"
I got it, of course.
Yeah, he goes, "I got it, I got it, again, I got it." Yeah. You know, so that was amazing. But, you know, with all everybody filming it and then coming out right after the intention experiment, that pretty much is a slam dunk on the fact that UFOs are here and they are interacting with us. And you know, the redundant giving exact dates and times over and over again to, you know, Paranormal State and BBC and ABC and Fox News and everything, and they got their footage as well. You know, I'm really surprised that a lot of the UFO community just hasn't gotten over it yet, that it is ongoing. And you know, and it's amazing that they're not becoming a part of this, because we do share everything with them.
And this is the part that I don't understand. When you have people from all walks of life going to East City and to James Ranch and experiencing this, and if you've seen some of the videos that James have posted, it's not James sitting in a lounge chair by himself looking up. You can hear the dozens of people around you saying, "My God, look at that, power up, we love you," etc. So it's something that so many people see. At the same time, the skeptics, they will completely try to debunk no matter what you provide. And here's another example. Somebody sent me a picture of me and some in the group there. And I saw the picture, and I saw this strange thing coming out of my head. It looked like smoke, or I don't know how to explain it. But then somebody else sent me another picture. I believe it was from a different camera. And the same thing can be seen around my head. It's not an orb. I cannot explain it. Somebody called it an ectoplasmic, I'm not sure about the term, James, but do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's plasma. Usually when you're being contacted or worked with, there's like a plasma field around you. The last class we did, Yigong classes here with Jenny Lam, and she's been doing martial arts all her life, and we got together, mm-hmm. and we were doing some energy work together, and they took some photographs, and I had this huge ball of plasma like right on my head where my head's supposed to be, and then we had a heart shaped object, you know, right above us, this beautiful red heart shaped, you know, looked like an orb, but you know, three times bigger than most orbs. It was amazing. But you know, we get footage like that almost every day here. We just get crazy photographs.
Now here's the issue with me, you know, somebody who comes from the corporate world, things have to be black and white. It's almost as if these things were hitting me in the head with a bat and saying, how much more proof do you want that your reality is not the real reality? We've been living in an illusion. There's more knowledge and there's more reality for us. All we need to do is look. And you can doubt people. You can doubt all you want, but you have to go. As everybody who listens to me know, I don't want to believe, I want to know. I took the trip to James Ranch. I was totally objective. I wanted to see if this was true or not, and believe me when I tell you that when I came back home, I was a different person. And I know a lot of people who were there share the same feeling, James.
Yeah, we had some great footage, you know, from that event. I think it's amazing a lot of these armchair investigators or scientists that you know, throw stones from afar, especially the physicists and the scientists. You know, the physics is there to explain this phenomenon if you apply it. And, you know, they can measure less than 1% of the universe that we live in. They know there's at least 11 dimensions out there. But at the same time, you know, they want you to give them physical proof of all of these non-physical events. But, you know, the video and the camera isn't enough. The eyewitnesses aren't enough. And, you know, they'll say, well, there was mass hypnosis. Well, I haven't been able to hypnotize my camera yet. I've tried, but it just keeps doing the same thing over and over again. You know, but... And then they say you photoshopped it, but you know, how do you photoshop something that had, you know, 200 witnesses present? And then
that's
you have
right.
Filmed by Lockheed engineers and triple PhD Boeing engineers who were there and witnessed it and testified on Coast to Coast and other shows as well. So it just seems like no matter how much evidence, I mean, you could just put a mountain of evidence and bury them in it, and they would dig their way out of it and say, "I didn't see anything."
You know, it's what I always say, and when I started this show, my second show was called Obama, the Disclosure President. And yes, those who are listening are probably laughing now, but I've come to the realization that disclosure will not come from governments. Folks, stop waiting for the governments to disclose. It's going to come at a grassroots level. And this is exactly what happens at eSETI. You go there and you see that this is real. You're not going to have any government admitting to this. Why? Because this has major repercussions. And I don't want to get into any conspiracy theory here, but it is true that oil rules the world. And if this technology, if we have it, and I have no way to prove that we do, at the same time, I can't believe that we have the space shuttle as the epitome of our most advanced technology to travel to you know, outside of the planet. So when you have the experiences that all of us have at James Ranch and see the proof, it's either we all got together and photoshopped or believe that what we're telling you is the truth.
Yeah, I know this technology is out there because I've actually seen it and held it in my hand and stood right next to, you know, Walter Rosenthal, which is a rocket man, you know, with NASA, and right alongside him, and he was looking at it, took it apart, had it run again, you know, incredible zero-point energy technology and putting out massive output, you know, no input, just massive output, and there's also counter-gravity as well, so it's out there. It does exist, and a lot of people know about it. The problem is, as you said, is the oil rules the world, and if you bring something out that's contradictory to that, you know, they either buy you off or you disappear, one or the other. And if people don't think that's happening and this is just conspiracy talk, I know firsthand because I experienced it firsthand, and I've lost some friends in that process.
And there's people, many of us have seen videos of people who are no longer with us. I remember a couple of years ago I saw an individual who had a car motor that ran with water, and he disappeared. So all these people are subverted or destroyed. Somebody comes and says, hey, look, we'll give you $1 million. Let's keep the technology. I mean, let's say General Motors comes along and buys it. We know what they're going to use it for. They're going to put it, store it away somewhere, and nobody's going to see, it's never going to see the light of day. So we also have to consider, what can we do to convince people like Rosenthal and John Searle, who are coming forward with certain things, to allow more people to come forward with this in a way that can go viral to the point that cannot be stopped. That's something that you and I have to talk about, because it's what we can do, James.
Exactly. I think, you know, I have it on video. I have these motors running, and one is a motor for a flying car, and the other one was a fuelless energy device for a house, and it would cover a house. And, you know, we videotape these things running. We put loads on them. You know, we put, light sticks on them. Stick after stick after stick, started plugging big drills, heavy-duty drills, equipment into it, turned them on. It had all these things running on this little tiny device you could hold in your hand, in the palm of your hand, and it didn't even phase it. It loved load. You know, the more load you put on, it just kept, you know, chugging along. And, that had to be dismantled and to put in different places because the inventor of it, you know, had his lab blown up and family threatened, and it was a real mess. And I was kind of involved in that whole mess as well. So, it's sad because even a lot of the people in the fuelless energy community that you think are on our side are really not. And they were around some of these problems that came up.
And it's a sad state of affairs. All you have to do is go back 100 and some years ago when most cities in the United States had trains, electric trains everywhere. And all of a sudden, Michelin and the tire companies came along, lobbied with the local governments, and they eradicated most trains. And now you may find them in San Francisco and New Orleans every so often. But, this goes back in time. Once the oil started pouring in, there was no stop to it. You know, cures. We can talk about cures. We haven't seen one cure since the 50s when polio was discovered, and the same thing now. I mean, what kind of new technology do we come out, that they come out with? I mean, we still build 747s and new planes. It's ancient technology. The problem is that it is still profitable to manufacture. And Dr. Paul Laviolette, who you may know, when he was on my show, he has written letters to NASA explaining how, and he had a system device, how to avoid the space shuttle from being so hot on reentry to the atmosphere that it could cause an explosion. Well, less than a year after he did that, they didn't do anything, and the Columbia exploded. Airlines, I have a relative who's a high-ranking member of an airline, and he says that the profit margins are so, so thin. And if they could find a way to increase fuel consumption, that would be just a paradigm shift. However, that is a subject that is not allowed to even talk about. So Dr. Laviolette approached the airlines, and once again, they said, we don't need it. Although they could be saving 70% fuel consumption and have their planes go cross-country in the United States, breaking the sound barrier and transporting goods and people in a flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely technology out there that's counter-gravity that, you know, these planes would not fall out of the sky. You know, it just wouldn't happen with these devices on them. So, there's so many things. I think about that. You know, they let people, you know, they sacrifice people on these space shuttles. They sacrifice people every day in other projects, you know, and airline crashes and things like that. And they just allow this to happen when none of it has to happen. And it just seems that human life is just so valueless now and expendable. And there's just a mass effort to make a lot of us go away. I mean, that's my conclusion, especially after looking at all the food additives and everything else that's going on and the GMO corn and other things that, you know, you can't even feed it to a rat because it kills it. You know, you look at this whole program, you go, boy, this is just an exercise in mass genocide. And, you know, this isn't conspiracy thinking. This is just logic, like looking at the facts and the consequences of these actions and, you know, it's just base common sense.
Absolutely. And some of us who are lucky to find out when, let me give you an example. When I moved to Florida, I was healthy, working out. I was about 22 years old, 23. And I all of a sudden started developing this weakness. I was tired all the time, and I didn't know what it was. I got concerned. I thought I was developing MS. So I went to the doctor, and the first thing she asked me was, okay, so tell me what you eat and drink. And at the time, I was eating a lot of Chinese food. I love Chinese food. And, okay, so what else do you drink? And I was drinking a gallon, one of those big gallons of diet soda every day. And she said, you need to stop this now, otherwise you're going to die. So I said to myself, what? I love Chinese food and diet soda. So I stopped. Not even a week later, I felt like a new person. And it was the NutraSweet and the MSG, which are the two most prevalent things you see now. I used to chew gum because I don't drink and I don't smoke. So I used to chew gum every so often to keep my concentration. And all of a sudden, less than 2 years ago, every single gum manufacturing company has put NutraSweet. So even the gum, and you see children eating gum on a daily basis, and that is proven that gives you brain tumors, cancer, MS, and a lot of other maladies. So, yes, you have to be very, very careful when you look at ingredients. Even if it says, let's say, Splenda. Splenda comes from natural sugar. Not true. It has chlorine, and it's derived from pesticides. Try to give it to a dog. Try to put it next to an ant hill. And if they don't eat it, you shouldn't either.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing the aspartame. You know, Rumsfeld had the patent on that, I guess, or pushed it through. But, you know, which makes sense. You know, he also had the for the antidote for anthrax, I think Tamiflu. You know, that was another program. But, you know, you just follow the money on all this stuff and look at who's behind it. And I'm wondering, you know, I have full faith that these people are going to fold in on themselves. They're going to implode. I don't care how big their castles are or their armies or whatever. They can't run from their karma. And, you know, that's being accelerated and quickened right now. But, you know, people have to really wake up and pull away and just stop participating. You know, stop buying those products. Stop participating in things that are detrimental to your health. And, you know, start eating close to the earth, start eating more organic, and, you know, just don't be a part of that program anymore.
And yes, a lot of people ask me, Mel, after doing this show for some time, have you come to any conclusions? A conclusion is so obvious. We live in a dual world. It's just duality. That's why you'll never see a one-world government. Never. Because they want to keep regions apart so that we can always have war. In order for a defense contractor to exist, you need to have war. So you need to create your own enemies. In order to have peace, you need to have war. In order to have medical industry survive, you need disease. That's why you have viruses that on the computer. Companies pay hackers to produce those viruses that those companies can produce. And the two things that are most profitable in this world are war and disaster. And when the BP oil spill started, I thought to myself, this is a part of the report from Iron Mountain, which we discussed during our show. First, the Cold War, then terrorism, then a natural disaster, that this could possibly be it. And then the next one, a lot of people think this is science fiction, and it's not, an alien invasion. So when you see the government starting to demonize aliens, a lot of these movies demonize aliens, it may be because they're preparing to do a false flag event, maybe Project Blue Beam, that some of you listening know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's an illusion, and they always put us against each other, Democrat against Republican, left versus right. And when you sit down, a lot of people from different parties, and you realize that you have so many things in common, and you're more of a centrist person, you realize that the mainstream media is the one feeding this fear. We need to get off this fear, because when we're in fear, we're stuck in the mud. We cannot move forward. Our bodies start shutting down. And even recently, years ago, I didn't know what a chakra was. And now I'm starting to realize and learning that they close when you are in fear. And we have exactly what happened in Germany in the 30s and 40s. You know, today's warning level is orange. That will never go away. But if you start ignoring it, look at the sky on a sunny day, look at the nature and the animals surrounding you. And an example of this is James Ranch, which to me is just paradise on this earth. You'll start to realize that you don't have to fall for the fear. That is just voluntary. Get off the fear and you'll be free.
Exactly. I think it's so, there's an old saying, to be enlightened means to be in knowledge of, both sides of the coin, the good, bad, and the ugly. And just pay attention on every level and do what's necessary, out of love for your own body and your friends and family. Do what's necessary to serve, the higher good. But I've seen a lot of people, say, they'll be living, right on the coast where the oil's spilling and everything. They go, well, that's not my reality. And I go, well, you do have a physical body. And you're sitting there right on the coast and you're breathing those fumes. So I think it's great to think positive, but at the same time, you might have a little reality check, as long as you have a physical body.
And also get off your TVs, people. All you need to do is spend 5 minutes on TV, and you start just bringing yourself down. Buy this, buy that, travel here, travel there, buy the better things. It's all materialism. I used to be in that world. Lisa, Renee, I talked about this before. You're trying to chase the mighty dollar, but then you realize that you were born without anything, and you'll die without anything. So to be yourself, and this is something that Ralph Waldo Emerson said, and I live by this quote now, to be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. Try to listen to those words, and you'll be totally free again.
Yeah, being authentic is quite a trip. Very few people are authentic, this is a whole show in itself, but I was talking about The Secret, and I said, well, The Secret, you're going to pull the rug out from under you because, the program that you're trying to manifest from is the intellect and the ego, and you've been given that program through your environment and through watching the boob tube, and all the other stuff, and social consciousness, but you don't even know who you are, so you're not going to manifest squat diddly because you're running a program that was given to you through social consciousness, which is in your ego and your intellect, and you have to get beyond that and find out what your unique soul purpose is, and then you start manifesting and you manifest, what you need, and then you got to clear out all the baggage that blocks the manifestations, all the old wounds and traumas and wrong conclusions from past experiences. A lot of people want that shortcut to, like an infomercial for materialism. You get the big house, the woman to die for, the Mercedes and everything else, and then you're happy, you know, well, then you can just be happy. A car doesn't have any emotions. You know, there's no happiness in a car. It's just a chunk of metal. You know, that happiness always comes from within.
In a way, it's almost a form of mind control that for decades society has instilled these behaviors into us so that the economy didn't collapse. They tell us that we need to go shopping, and they never tell us that we need to sit down and be with ourselves sometimes and admire nature, which costs nothing. So it's very important to be in touch with nature and look at the things where you don't have to pay. But, you know, this is not an attack on intellectuals. You know, some people with PhDs are very respected, but they're taught in a way by academia. And if you cannot prove, and if you defy the laws of physics, all of a sudden you're a kook. You lose the career you have with the university, and that's why I use the example of Dr. Brooks Agnew. He can walk both ways. He can walk in the spiritual way, and he can walk in the academia way. So just because you are a PhD or an intellectual doesn't mean that there's knowledge out there that you cannot explain. And this is a metaphor that I use all the time. I used it with Lisa. When you turn on your radio, you're listening to a radio station, and just because you cannot hear the dozens of other radio stations out there, it doesn't mean they don't exist. Or the majority of the matter in the universe is dark matter. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean that it's not there. So the same thing is with knowledge. There's knowledge out there that we cannot explain. It doesn't mean that it's not there. We just need to look for it in a different way than the one that we were taught.
Yeah, so the old saying, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result is a form of insanity. People keep running the same program over and over and over again, and they don't have any space for a new program. You know, I like what Jenny said. They have a cup, actually, that it's kind of interesting. When you fill it up, you can fill it up to half full, and it's fine. And as soon as you try to fill it over half full, everything goes out of it, the special little cup they have in it. And it's kind of a joke, you know, and it's like so that much wants more program, you know, it's like they show it doesn't work, you know, it's hilarious. But it's showing them that you have to empty your cup, you know, you have to keep emptying your cup if you're going to learn something new.
And what you said about schizophrenia or, you know, somebody who does something again and again expecting a different outcome, something that Bashar, some people who listen to you know who Bashar is, he says that if you do something without knowing again and again, it's a habit. But if you finally find out and you realize that you're doing it, it's a choice. We have the choice to make a difference. All we need to do is realize that we're doing it.
I agree. You know, we're about out of time here, so before we get off the air, I want you to give your website and how people can contact you and listen to your show.
Absolutely. The website, very simple, veritasshow.com. That's veritasshow.com. They can come and listen to half of our shows. We only survive on voluntary subscriptions, folks. We're not part of the establishment. We don't have any commercials or people who can censor us, so we prefer to do it just like that. So you can listen to half the show, and if you like what you hear, you can subscribe and keep Veritas on the air so we can have great people like James Gillenan and all the rest of the great people we've had on the show so far.
Great. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been an awesome event, and you know, I bet after you went home, you're probably going to be watching the skies a little bit more and having some things flying around overhead, you know, where you live.
Absolutely. I have a tripod on, and I'm going to share with all of you if I find something. And as you always say to people, look up to the sky because you'll never know what you'll find, but you have to look.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We've got to sign off. Have a great, great evening. Over in your neck of the woods, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, James. Take care.
All right, this is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great evening, and watch the skies. It isn't just in Trout Lake where this phenomenon is happening. It's happening all over the world. So grab your camcorders, go outside, get your night vision flipped on, and see what's flying. Have a good evening. Good night.